When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Rafael Nadal has 12 French Open titles to his name. Just saying that out loud seems preposterous, but that is the situation. He's beaten Dominic Thiem in the men's singles final at Roland Garros in four sets, the first two of which were just incredible sets of tennis. Myself, David Law, joined by Catherine Whittaker in Paris. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, David.
And by Matt Roberts, who is not in Paris, but is here on the Tennis Podcast and has been coming up with stats that are sort of Rafael Nadal-esque in their brilliance over the course of the last few hours. How are you doing, Matt?
Very well. Slightly concerned how we're going to find the words to do this justice, really.
Yeah, actually, Chris Bradnam on Eurosport said, I think we're going to have to find a new word, invent a new word to describe Rafael Nadal's achievements, which I think is quite a good point. It reminds me of, Catherine, years ago you said that trying to think of a better tennis player in terms of the way he goes about it than Roger Federer is like trying to find and invent a new colour. And we're at that stage, aren't we? Because, as I say, saying it out loud, what Nadal is achieving right now, he's rewriting record books and he's rewriting kind of our understanding of what makes sense in professional sport.
Yeah, I mean, I asked Alex Correia, a native Spaniard, of course, and former French Open finalist on air just sort of an hour or so ago, what is the word for if 10 is la decima and 11 is la onzima, what is 12? And he didn't really know. He said something, la duodecima. Does that sound like a
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, that's it.
Right, okay. It's not as catchy, is it? I feel like
no.
We all need to work on that a bit, or maybe Spain in general needs to work on that. there are no words, and yet our job here is to come up with words. I know you should never say never in sport, or perhaps indeed in life, but it's never going to be done again. Maybe I should temper that by saying in my lifetime, which I hope is relatively long from here. it's never going to be done again. It's just not, is it? It's not.
Can't imagine it. I mean,
no.
If you consider that a tennis player, if we're talking about long careers, Roger Federer has managed just over 20, managing about 20 years as a tennis pro. Nadal has been a pro for 14 years. He's won the French Open 12 times in 14 years. Well, what? That's ridiculous. There's only one of them a year. But the match itself was a cracker for two sets, basically, wasn't it? And the first set, I think a few people were saying that the first six games of that opening set were quite possibly the best first six games of a singles final in a Grand Slam that anybody could remember. Now, I think it's one of those where there's always a bit of recency bias in that, isn't there? It's happening in front of you. You can't believe what you're seeing. You're saying, well, this has never happened before. But the way they were just sort of duking it out, Matt, it kind of felt like that to me. What about you?
Yeah, well, Thiem's level through those first six or seven games was extraordinary. He came out just pulverizing the ball, and yet he wasn't managing to get ahead, which just showed how well Nadal was playing as well. And it just felt like whenever Thiem raised his level, he did manage to get a break, Nadal just raised his even higher. And I think in the match he broke Nadal twice, and Nadal broke back straight away both times. And it was just an extraordinary performance from Nadal. Yeah. And I felt for Thiem because he is closing the gap. He is a better player than he was last year. And yet, okay, he got a set, but and he is getting closer, but the gap is still so enormous for him to breach.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is still enormous.
It is less enormous, don't you think, than it was last year?
Less, yeah. But it's
does it matter if it's still enormous?
And because Nadal, I think, in these last 3 years, he's won a hat-trick of these Roland Garros titles now. And I think he's playing some of his best tennis in these last 3 years. He's a more complete player than he used to be. His backhand's better. He's better at the net. I think I just saw Thiem said Nadal hasn't missed a volley for 7 years. And there's so much to his game now, Nadal, that even if you find a way to beat him for two or three games, he changes it up. And his unrelenting brilliance is what makes him so dominant on the clay.
That's the thing. The fact that he keeps on coming at you and you can't... You may be able to find level 11 versus his level 10, even though 11 doesn't exist. You may be able to find that sort of absurdity of shot making for a bunch of games and do what Thiem did and actually win a set. But then he lost the next two 6-1, 6-1. So that's what you're up against with Rafael Nadal. What was that set, by the way, that stat, by the way, Matt, about the number of times he gets broken and then breaks straight back?
Yeah, apparently he does it more than anyone else. I think Jim Courier said on the ITV commentary that he breaks 39% of the time in the game immediately following the one where he's just been broken. Which just shows how he's able to put things behind him and never shrink and never be beaten.
The ultimate mental resilience, isn't it? The ultimate mental resilience. I mean, everything we discussed in our Rafael Nadal special, which we released a couple of weeks ago, is borne out by that statistic and borne out by the pattern and the narrative of the match today. I really think had that been a best of three match, Dominic Thiem is a good enough tennis player to maybe have won it. But he's not a good enough mentally. Nobody in the world is even close to good enough mentally to be able to redline your game for best of five sets, which is what you know you have to do against Rafael Nadal. Nobody can do it, and you know that he's not going to have a mental dip at any moment. I really think had it been best of three, it would have been perhaps not quite 50-50, but 55-45 in
the third
set. Is that
because of the nearer finish line, Catherine? If you look at the stats themselves, he lost the third set 6-1.
Yeah, but that was because it puts a completely different mental complexion on a match. Dominic Thiem gets to the end of that second set, and perhaps not consciously at the forefront of his mind, but his being knows that he has had to absolutely purple patch it, red line it, do just completely push himself to 100% and beyond to win that set. And he's thinking, well, not even thinking, it's just a knowing that it's basically impossible to do that for another two sets beyond it. I think mentally the complexion that puts on a match is completely different. If it's a best of three match, it's just different.
He'd have had the finish line at least right. It's one set, shoot out, give everything, don't hold anything back. And perhaps that might have made a difference, is what you're saying.
Of course it makes a difference. Of course it does. We're playing Rafael Nadal, knowing that he's not going to drop or have a moment of loss of focus for the whole of best of five sets for 6 hours if necessary. Just the panic that must place in you. I mean, I would panic knowing, oh my goodness, I just can't afford to do anything. I can't afford to just let up even for a moment. I'm in the hotel bar at the moment, and a replay of that double fist pump he did at the start of the third set has just come on, and that must just feel like, oh my God, I'm playing the best I possibly can play, and it's just enough to scrape me a set. I mean, it's brutal.
And it's the actual physical challenge of it as well, because team was saying before, okay, I've played these matches in the last 3 days, but I'll be fine physically. But I think even though he's played Nadal before, he perhaps underestimated the physical challenge of winning three sets against Nadal on that clay court, because I think he did hit the wall a bit physically in those third and fourth sets. And just the amount of effort that Nadal takes out of you, I think, just to be able to win a set and just to be able to win points against him is ridiculous. I remember thinking that when he played Dumanor at the Australian Open on a hard court, I thought, how is Dumanor going to keep this up? It's a struggle to win points. Now, team has got firepower that Dumanor hasn't, but put it on a clay court and that gets a bit neutralised. And I just don't see how anyone, if Nadal is physically at his best, can live with Nadal over five sets on clay.
No. I mean, the only little question mark in my mind is if you'd got still conditions and a fresh Djokovic, that maybe he could have done, but he didn't even get there. So, and actually, the way Nadal played today, I mean, I don't see how anybody could have beaten him. And the line you say about the fatigue, that's something that Brad Gilbert is always talking about in terms of when Andre Agassi was at his best, that he would try to just take his opponent's legs away and it would look really, really close. And that's the thing, at three games all, and when team had got the early break, you're thinking that this is how it's going to be. That's how it looks. You can't see a situation whereby one player ends up winning two sets for the loss of two games. But he's a different player in sets three and four, Dominic Thiem, and it's because, okay, yes, he has had a day less to recover. We all talk about that in a second. But the other guy down the other end is playing a sport that he knows he can continue basically the same in set five as he is in set one, and no one else is able to do that.
No, I mean, it's. I really think forehands and backhands wise, Thiem is only a fraction off from Nadal. I do think Nadal is better, but it's marginal. It's really marginal on that surface. I do think just in terms of the sheer shot making and even tactical nous, really, I think team is there. It's the mental relentlessness. It's like sometimes I suppose different people's minds work in different ways, but sometimes when I'm in a plank at the gym and my trainer is there, sometimes she'll tell me that I've only got 10 seconds left when actually I've got 30 seconds left, because she knows that mentally I'll be able to keep it up longer if I know that the finish line is a little bit closer. It's almost like someone needed to tell Dominic Thiem it's a best of three match. You only need to keep it up for another set, and then he could have regrouped after that set. Do you see what I mean?
It makes total sense.
No, I do, yeah.
It's all a mental battle.
I think you kind of have to trick yourself into thinking you can do it, because if you look at the challenge logically and as it is, you've got no chance.
Absolutely. Yeah, logically, you've got no chance. So you've got to create some kind of alternate reality.
And if Dominic Thiem hasn't got a chance, with his firepower, who has? That's the thing.
I mean, nobody. Right now, nobody on clay. I mean, the good news for everyone else is that the clay court season's over.
Yeah. And that's it, isn't it? Because it's so easy to be a bit blasé about Nadal's achievements on clay. I think we spoke about this on our special. But I think, and sort of take it for granted, but I think this season, more than any, has made you realise how special of an achievement it is, because we saw the human Nadal. We saw the Nadal who wasn't at his best in Monte Carlo, in Madrid and in Barcelona, where he did lose. And yet he comes to Roland Garros and he's won again. And it feels like everything feels normal again. But it's taken a huge amount of work and building to get for Nadal to get where he is.
I completely agree with you, Matt, and I think that's a really significant point, because there have been years in among these 12 when Nadal has won this title when it's felt inevitable. It's felt inevitable right from the first ball struck in Monte Carlo, and it's almost you almost sort of greet it with a bit of a shrug, which is completely unfair, but such is, you know, our responses to things sometimes. You know, we want drama, we want spectacle, we want the unexpected, and there have been seasons in the 12 when Nadal has ended up winning Roland Garros where there has been nothing unexpected about it from the word go. This has been one of the most interesting journeys to a Roland Garros title that I can remember for Rafael Nadal.
The set that Team won 7-5. I mean, I thought he did incredibly well to just keep sticking with Nadal, because it's not like Nadal's level dropped in that second set. Really, you mentioned while it was going on, Catherine, that he was missing quite a lot of overheads, but the rest of his game was just in pristine condition. How did Team manage to win that set, Matt? What was your sense?
Well, my take on it was actually it was quite opportunistic, because he'd barely won a point on Nadal's serve throughout the whole set, and he had that scoreboard lead because he'd served first. He got to 6-5, and then I think almost maybe he did sort of change his mentality a bit and think, right, I've got one shot here before we go to a tie break, and he managed to grab 4 points on Nadal's serve and just sort of grab the set. But I don't think him winning the set was an indication of I've got Nadal now. It was kind of just one game where he really took it from Nadal. I didn't get the sense that he was suddenly the more superior player in the match with all the momentum going into the third.
No, when they got to one set all, that was the moment, wasn't it, where you just thought, right, okay. And Nadal actually went off the court. He wetted his hair. He came out and he looked like he'd just gone through the car wash and come out a new model, you know. And I thought some of the most inspirational tennis that I've seen in such a long time. It's kind of like the Australian Open, but on Nadal's turf, you know. This was his statement. And so there he stands with 12 French Open titles. How many more of these things, realistically, do we think he can win? Because, you know, what is he? Is he 33 now? He's 33, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't. The body is a question mark, but he never looks okay. He's had the wrist problem, etc. But I don't get overly concerned about him when he gets onto clay. Normally, it's as though the body is able to adapt to that, provided he's gone into it in just semi-decent fitness. And he kind of worked his way into it this time. 33 years of our age, he's on 12 now. How many is he going to get?
That's so difficult, David, because you know it's all about his body. If his body allows him, at least two. But the body is such a big question mark, and there's no possible way. We are not in a position to predict what his body will do over the next couple of years. We know he has tendonitis in his knee, which is not a curable condition. It's a condition that you manage, and it has flare-ups, and clay is the kindest surface to a condition like that. So if the body allows, at least two.
Yeah, I could imagine him getting to 15.
Good God. Come on.
Can you imagine if he has more Roland Garros titles than Pete Sampras has Grand Slams?
I mean, he's two behind. He's two behind.
Do you think Pete Sampras will show up for that?
Yeah, it's just bizarre. Matt, the other thing that you mentioned as well is that he's now closer to Federer in Grand Slam Hall than he's ever been.
Yeah, he's moved to within two for the first time. Federer obviously on 20, Nadal now on 18. And it's just well, first thing, it goes to show how significant that 2017 Australian Open final was. If that had gone the other way, they would have been tied now if everything else had played out. But I know you obviously can't think of it like that. And it just, for me, they just keep pushing each other, these guys. I just think as soon as one starts pulling away, the other one just comes back. And I just think as long as they're around, and Djokovic as well, they're going to keep doing that. It's absurd to try and predict, because they're just going to keep moving the posts.
Mm. And yet that's not going to stop us, because that's basically what we do here on the Tennis Podcast. I had my moment in the sun yesterday. Catherine, I think you need to take a little bow right now after your splendid fortnight in which you've obliterated Matt and I in the predictions.
Yeah, 9 out of 15.
She's got her own stats, Matt.
It's unheard of. You know, just on that point, I really think it's a problem. Tsitsipas aside, because I think he's just so wonderfully different mentally, and thank goodness for him, by the way. But it's a real problem for the youngsters, for this next gen that have been so bigged up and do have the goods, I think, in terms of actual tennis. But mentally, I just think how brilliant and how relentless and how committed and full of desire the big three still are is extremely problematic. There is such an enormous gulf still, and I think it's not just the fact of the gulf, I think the perception of the gulf for those lot is can you see any of, as I say, Tsitsipas aside, can you see any of the much touted next gen getting anywhere near the relentless brilliance of those three?
At Grand Slam level, honestly, no. And I think that certainly not at the moment. And I think it really feels quite jolting to see how far away Zverev was from Djokovic the other day when you consider what he did to him at the ATP Finals. And just a reminder of how different it is.
And David, something you pointed out to me, how accepting he was of that golf. After the match, he said, well, Djokovic is world number one for a reason. And of course, yes, he's right. But I think you texted me and said, look, Tsitsipas would never have said that. And that is what sets Tsitsipas apart, thank goodness. But the rest of them, I think they look at those three and they think, my goodness me, they're amazing. They love them. They respect them. But they don't really think they can ever be anything like them. I don't think. I think Tsitsipas sees them and thinks, yeah, I can be like you. I don't care how brilliant you are, I can be like you. I think the others think, wow, you know, I'd like to be really good and I'd like to be number one and I'd like to win Grand Slams, but I'm not ever going to be that.
Mm, no. Oh, dear. Actually, just one other quick point. I think you said, Catherine, that you think that they've got the goods, that there is... they have the tennis talent. I question that. I think that that is not...
I'm not saying they have the tennis talent of Roger Federer, David. I'm saying these guys are good.
They are good, but I think it's important to look at those three and realise just how good they are at the tennis, as well as the mental side of it. It's not just Federer. Look at the volleys Nadal was hitting today. I mean, their talent is, I think... we take that a little bit for granted as well. I just their games are so complete, these three. There are no holes at all. Okay, Nadal's game works better, obviously, on clay. Djokovic's works better on hard court. But they're incredible players, and because they've added to their games over the years. I kind of look at those two particularly and think, yes, back when the next gen, when they were that age, they might have been a similar sort of level, but they've created something else. They've created other layers to their games, and I'm not sure whether we're going to see that from these young lads. Time will tell.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
I agree. I just think it can be easy to feel frustrated by the next gen, if you like, and the fact that they're not coming through. But my take on it is that these three are just simply too good, and it must be so almost soul-destroying for them knowing that these three are still around and still winning everything. And I in a sort of weighing up how much I think it's to do with the next gen not being good enough and the big three being too good, I would lean heavily towards the big three being too good, because it's never happened before, and what they're doing is completely unique. And I think the ideal situation is that a Tsitsipas and Auger Aliassime, these guys come through and usurp them, but it just makes me think that we're not going to have that. As long as these guys are still playing, they will be the guys to beat.
They'll need to wait for them to make way. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do. I think what I'm getting at is that the point you made about, David, I think it was you that made it about, they just keep pushing one another to get better. Every time one of them nudges ahead and does something that you're not expecting them to do or wins a slam, another one of them comes back. They each are nudging one another along. Mm. You sort of want the next gen to be nudged in the same way. You want them to go, well, hang on a second, you're not pulling away from me again. I'm gonna prove that I'm the next. And I feel like actually what's happening is they're sort of seeing that and being a bit defeated by it, really. They're in awe. They're going, well, that's going on and it's brilliant and I'll never get anywhere close to it, so I'll just bide my time and wait for them to go away and then step into the spotlight once they're gone.
But I do think within their own little group, they've kind of helped each other along. You know, Shapovalov had his breakthrough, then Zverev came along. Now we've got Tsitsipas. They're kind of pushing each other.
Yeah, but it's such small fry.
I know.
When you look at what we've seen today. I do, in terms of what you were saying about how complete a player Nadal is, that's a really good point. And I do wonder whether the only area that Nadal lacks, there's no area that Nadal lacks. The only area that team lacks, I think, is the hands and the skills up at the net. And I do wonder, since teaming up with Nicolas Massou, team's already added a huge amount of variety to his game. We've talked about the slice backhand. He's been playing a lot more doubles. He's been playing doubles with Diego Schwartzman, which is one of my favourite bizarre doubles pairings. And I do wonder whether we'll see more of that and whether that's something that team is looking at in those three and thinking, you know, I don't want to have any incomplete areas in my game. And I hope that is something we see more of.
And on team as well, just as much as obviously clay is his best surface, he's been having better results on hard court. And it does make me think that the US Open this year, I think he's got a real shot there, because the gap between him and Nadal on clay is big, but on a hard court, he really pushed Nadal last year, and adding in these little subtleties and variety that he has added this year, as you said, with Massou, I think he could be a real force at the US Open. And maybe it's not a guarantee that he will ever win Roland Garros, certainly when Nadal's around. But given, I think Thiem is the one who's made real improvements to his game, and they could pay off for him on hard court.
He also, Catherine, really won a few people over. I mean, I think he's been gradually doing that for a while, frankly, because he's a quiet lad, isn't he, Dominic Thiem? I think people have sort of tried to work out, well, how do you get to know Dominic Thiem? How do you get to care about him? But his sort of authenticity came through in his post-match speech on court, and it was quite moving, but not in a dramatic way. He's no actor, but he just let you in. And it was quite moving, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many comparisons to Andy Murray, both situational, that 2012 final that Andy Murray lost to Roger Federer. That was the first time he'd won a set in a Grand Slam final. He'd lost three previously in straight sets, and that was the trembling lip, getting closer moment. When he took the mic from Sue Barker and said, I'm going to try this and it's not going to be easy. And there were so many, it really felt reminiscent of that today. I know I sort of foreshadowed it yesterday, so maybe it was a sort of self-fulfilling thing that I already had that in the back of my mind. But exactly what you say, that just the authenticity of it, the just sort of down-to-earth, nice guy, no bells and whistles authenticity of his speech, letting you in, letting you know how he's feeling, but not overplaying it, not trying to win sympathy, was so endearing, so endearing. And I'm so pleased at the warmth he received from the crowd. I'm also pleased that the crowd wasn't overwhelmingly in favour of Dominic Thiem, because yes, there is, as we've talked about, a lot of Nadal fatigue at Roland Garros amongst the crowd, and to be honest I do completely understand that. I really do. But equally, he doesn't deserve to have the crowd against him, and I thought it was a really nice balance in those terms today. Felt like they just all wanted a great match out on Châtelet today, and that was wonderful. And the warmth of Dominic Thiem was quite moving, actually, really moving. I was quite moved by his speech, the way he finished it, and just sort of said, "Rafa, you're so great," or something like that. It was all just.
And I'll try again next year.
I'll try again next year.
I'll have another go.
Oh, yeah, dear. He needs an Olympics in Austria, doesn't he? That's what he needs. That's what got Andy Murray over the line. I don't think the Olympics is going to Austria anytime soon. I don't think that's on the cards.
Probably not. So, big congratulations to Rafael Nadal, a 12th French Open crown, and now he goes and has a go on the grass. I mean, I suspect he won't play anything before Wimbledon. I think he'll probably just rest up. How do you like his chances, Matt? You first.
Well, he's in the mix.
Hey! Pat Cash told us he was in the mix on Eurosport's coverage. He's obviously, the mix is spreading, people.
Pat has heard about the mix.
And he did well last year, didn't he, at Wimbledon, having not played a warm-up. Mm. And I just think it's all about his fitness, isn't it? Because if his body's there, his tennis is there, okay, he's not going to be the same force on grass ever that he is on clay, but you wouldn't want to. He's still very much one of the favourites, but I would put him probably behind certainly Djokovic and probably Federer.
Yeah, I mean, you've created a get out of jail free card for pundits everywhere with the mix, Matt. So you've created a horrible, horrible monster there. Do you think Nadal's going to win Wimbledon? Well, he's in the mix. Yeah. Breaking news, the world number two is in the mix to win a Grand Slam. Yeah. Well, I mean, I find Nadal's Wimbledon record over the past few years strange, really, because last year aside, when he so very much could have been in the final, but for maybe the roof situation on the resumption of that match against Djokovic in the semi-finals. I find his Wimbledon record a bit odd, because until last year, he'd had a few really, really duff years. And I've always thought that was a bit of an anomaly, really, because after he wins the French Open, I always think, yeah, he's going to show up on the grass. And, you know, the grass is quite kind to his knees as well. Why wouldn't he carry that momentum and confidence and everything through as he did, you know, 2008, etc.? But he hasn't done that the last few years. But logic still tells me he might. In the mix. In conclusion, he's in the mix.
And I think, I think at Wimbledon, his draw is more important because the people that have beaten him have been the sort of players who've taken the racket out of his hand. Like, I think, was it Gilles Muller just serving out of his mind? Kyrgios, Dustin Brown.
Dustin Brown, yeah.
If Russell, if he gets one of those, he's in trouble. But if he gets kind of, I don't know, baseline grinders, I suppose, he'll go far.
Is Kyrgios going to be seeded at Wimbledon? Yes, he is, isn't he? Just somewhere between 20 and 30?
I've not thought about Nick Kyrgios for a while.
No. Right, now, what else has happened today in Roland Garros, Matt? There have been other finals. Bring us up to date.
Yeah, we were halfway to the Kiki Mladenovic-Dominic Thiem double because Kiki Mladenovic partnered Timea Babos and won the women's doubles over a Chinese pairing, Duan Ying Ying and Zheng Sai Sai, who had never played before this tournament. They'd never played together before, and yet they got to the final. And, yeah, is this a segue to quickly mention Jem's life?
Go for it.
Hope so, Matt. Certainly hope so.
Well, we had some bad news, didn't we, about Jem's life? They appear to be no more.
Yeah.
Whereas Kiki Mladenovic and Dominic Thiem are...
Yeah, but Gael Monfils and Delina Svitolina, who had created this joint Instagram page, do appear, folks, to have deleted that page and, according to reports, unfollowed each other on social media, which apparently is the new age dumping.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've deleted all evidence of ever having been together. Look, I was all on board with Jem's life. I thought they were good together. I thought they were having a good impact on one another's tennis. I think, you know, they jumped into a joint Instagram account too quickly, I think. I think in the first year of a relationship, don't do it. I mean, frankly, ever. Don't do it ever.
Yeah, I think unfollowing on social media is the new cutting people's heads out of pictures, isn't it?
Well, back in my day, we used to do things like that. Okay, what are the finals that we had that we can probably relate to somebody's relationship?
We had, well, the girls' singles final yesterday was won by Leila Fernandez, who is from the country to be from at the moment in tennis, Canada. She only lost 18 games in the whole tournament across five matches. So add her to the list of promising Canadians.
Is she in the mix for Wimbledon, Matt?
Which mix is she in?
And then the boys' singles was won by a guy called Holger Rune of Denmark, and he is from the Muratoglu Academy.
That's a sensational name.
I suspect Patrick will remind us all of that frequently in the coming weeks.
Yeah, he's Danish, and there's been a lot of winners of slams from the Muratoglu, junior slams from the Muratoglu Academy recently, so he's another one.
Well, they're all there, aren't they?
Well, yeah.
Every last one.
And then the Dutch seem to be very good at wheelchair tennis, and the top seed, De Groot, beat second seed Kamiji 6-1, 6-love in the women's. And then they had the doubles final against each other, and De Groot won again. In the men's wheelchair singles, Gordon Reid lost to Gustavo Fernandez of Argentina. And in the quad wheelchair, Dylan Alcott beat David Wagner, not the former Huddersfield manager. And then they teamed up together to win the doubles. So that's a formidable force there.
Just on the subject of... De Groot there, I believe that she has won four majors in a row and six of the last eight.
Oh, wow.
Which is extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. Big results.
Yeah. Right. Well, just before we go, Catherine, before we started recording, you told us about where you were trying to record in the bar. and you sort of heard yourself on the podcast before you even started recording the podcast. Tell us about it.
I don't know how to explain what happened in the moments before recording this podcast. About sort of 4 meters away from me, two young-ish men having a drink, and one of them is fiddling around on his phone, and then suddenly the voice of David Law and Catherine Whittaker and Matt Roberts comes pumping out of it. And then he sort of quickly fumbles around and puts it on mute. And I sort of shot them a look as if to say, oh, that's funny. Like, you know, you've obviously spotted that Tennis Podcast presenter Catherine Whittaker's in the house. And I don't know what was going on anyway. He didn't seem to have any recognition of who I was. And then I subsequently had to get my podcast equipment out. It was this, it was as if I was sort of trying to say, oh, don't you know who I am? And anyway, they've got up and left now. But they had those Tennis Podcast fans had no idea that they were in the midst of Tennis Podcast. Well, I don't know. Insert adjectives here.
Activity.
Presentership. Activity. Yeah.
You're being bashful. I happen to know that all they were trying to do was avoid spoilers, because they wanted to hear the thing through properly through their headphones as per normal.
Can I just tell you, just reverting to an earlier completely irrelevant point that I started to make and backtracked on, Nick Kyrgios is currently ranked 36 in the world, so the whole of the men's tennis universe, David, is desperately hoping he does well at Queen's, because nobody wants him to be unseeded at Wimbledon.
Hmm. Yes, well, that's where he's going to be, at the FIVA Tree Championships in a week's time, along with quite a few others. We're going to be there as well. We will be there, and we'll be bringing you daily tennis podcasts from Queens. Stefanos Tsitsipas is going to be there, as Catherine said, Kyrgios. We've got Ogier Aliassime. We've got Marin Cilic defending the title. And in the doubles now, we know that Andy Murray is going to be playing alongside Feliciano Lopez in his comeback tournament. So that's going to be fascinating to see. Just very quickly, guys, how have you enjoyed the French Open overall? Matt, you did the first week and a bit. Catherine, you've been there for the whole thing. Catherine, what have you thought of it?
Oh, well, the media restaurant food has been awful. And it's been so awful. Today, they managed to end on a fittingly low point of grey vegetables and rubbery cod, and it felt so perfect. But tennis-wise, it's been brilliant. Tennis-wise, stories-wise, I mean, organisation-wise, it's been a disaster, I think. But it's given us all something to talk about. It's made it memorable. And I really think, tennis-wise, it'll live with me for quite a long time.
Better when Matt was there, wasn't it?
It was a bit better when Matt was there, yeah. It's important when you are eating rubbery cod or uncooked cow for lunch that you can have someone to commiserate with while you're doing
that. We had some miserable lunches together, didn't we, Catherine?
It really was dire.
Yeah, I echo everything Catherine said. It was better for me when Matt was there as well. But yeah, and look, I think at every slam you always take something away from it, and I think there's been a lot to take away from this tournament tennis-wise. I mean, Ash Barty, Nadal, for me, just Naomi Osaka's little sort of the week she was in the tournament I found was fascinating, and seeing her lose was quite shocking, even though it was clay, maybe we should have expected it. And then the match, Tsitsipas Wawrinka, being able to witness that is something that will definitely stay with me for a long time.
Yeah, same here. And just to sign off for me, I just like to thank both Catherine and Matt for their work, particularly when they were both over there. It was fantastic to, frankly, for me, just to be a listener. I've never had that before with the Tennis Podcast. We've been doing it for 7 years. We've produced 530 odd shows. Then they went out to Paris together and they produced some of the best shows we've ever had, and I was nowhere to be heard, and that was absolutely fine by me because I loved them. Going forwards, folks, I just want to say thanks to all those people who backed our Kickstarter, which is what enabled Matt to go to Roland Garros, just the same way as he went to the Australian Open at the start of the year. It's enabled us to have him full-time on our team. That's what we've been using all those funds that we raised at the end of last year and the start of this year in order to fund these trips and Matt to be a full-time member of our team. And he's absolutely fantastic, as I'm sure many of you listening appreciate him just as much as we do. Our goal next year is to have him at the French Open for the full duration. So when we get to the end of the, that's assuming you want to, Matt. Do you want to?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, right. Well, that's our goal, folks. End of this year, we'll be running our Kickstarter crowdfunding venture once more, and we try to make it bigger and better every time. Obviously, it means we're asking for more money each time, but the goal is to try to build the audience to such a size that it doesn't cost each of you individually more. You can put whatever you want in, but if we've got more people to contribute, we can raise more, and then we can send Matt and Catherine and myself to do more interviews and to travel and to go to the biggest tournaments and be together and be able to produce daily shows the way we have been doing so. That's what we're trying to achieve every single time we run those Kickstarter crowdfunding efforts, and the same will apply at the end of this year.
Inedible lamb chops await, Matt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you've got another 6 days of awful food, Matt. That's the goal. And we might even let you do your laundry this time. So,
yeah.
So that has been the Tennis Podcast from Roland Garros for 2019, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and executive produced by tennisballs.com with our mascot Rio with a Y. We will be back at Queen's a week from now with our preview of that tournament. We'll be daily throughout there. We'll be daily during Wimbledon. Matt has got accreditation for the first time to represent us at Wimbledon as well. So we'll be bringing you shows galore over the next few weeks. We hope you have enjoyed the last couple of weeks. If you have, let people know. I mean, I say this every show, but seriously, I've explained why we want to grow our audience. Of course we do. It's nice for us, and the more the merrier. The more people can pitch in and help us to make this show even better. And do leave us a review on iTunes if you could, or on Facebook, or whatever your platform of choice is. It all helps to just spread the word. But thanks for your company. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.